Today's episode is brought to you by HelloFresh. Do you feel like you're stuck in a dinner rut? With HelloFresh, you get pre-measured ingredients with mouth-watering seasonal recipes delivered right to your door. Skip all those trips to the grocery store and count on HelloFresh to make home cooking easy, fun, and affordable. You can now enjoy cooking and get dinner on the table in 30 minutes or less. With over 25 recipes to choose from each week, there is something for everyone to enjoy. All recipes are designed and tested by professional chefs and nutritional experts to ensure deliciousness and simplicity. I will say there were some deliciousness experts because we looked at the menu and these look delicious. Javier, what stood out to you? What do you want on the menu this week?
Oh, Evan, the bacon-wrapped salmon with tarragon cream and broccolini. Want it in my mouth, want it digested, and I want it every single day of my life because this thing looked incredible.
That sounds delicious. I'm trying to be on a little bit of a health kick recently, and I'm looking at the vegetarian options. Portobello mushroom bulgogi bowl, that sounds like non-boring vegetarian food because sometimes vegetarian food is boring.
I don't even know what a bulgogi is, but yes, I just added the pizzazz that I needed.
You had me at bulgogi. You don't need to say no more. If you want HelloFresh, you can go to the link in our show notes and get $80 off, including free shipping on HelloFresh, the number one meal kit. Welcome to Crossbody Work. My name is Evan.
I am Javier.
And Haas Month is coming to an end.
As we go on, we remember.
You know?
Oh, that's our
yeah. Every graduation people have been to. Haas Month is ending with Taz, a tiny Haas.
Yes, the tiniest of, actually, technically he's not the tiniest of Haas, as we found out. The tallest, tiniest man in the world.
The tiniest Haas is Hornswoggle.
No, though. Yeah, actually. I mean, he's not taller than Ishii, which is... Or he is taller than Ishii, which is wild to me. Because Taz always struck me as a guy who's like 5'3".
Yes. Yeah, that's not part of the reason I like Taz growing up, is because I also was short. And then I was like, me and Taz are the same, and Taz is taller than me. I'm like, you bastard, you sold out to the tall people.
There's like a point where he's like the same height as Sabu, and I know how tall Sabu is. But at the same time, it's like, no, Taz is a baby. So why is Sabu so short?
Taz is baby.
Taz is tiny, all right? I'm sorry.
But we're watching Taz. We're checking out his matches this week. Before we get into everything, we're going to talk about actual wrestling that's happening right now. Because there was something that happened this past week, I guess by the time this comes out, last Friday, that was kind of a big deal, you know? Kind of a big deal.
Yeah, I know. I watched SmackDown too. It was kind of crazy.
It was crazy. It was
Baron Corbin.
Baron Corbin's going through it. No, we're talking about CM Punk coming back, and it was really good.
Yeah. It's really very good. Timely too, Evan. Why is it so timely?
It is so timely because we are covering CM Punk for our next three-parter starting next week. We led with that. We didn't even save it for the end of the episode, you guys. You can log off now. Thanks for listening. No, just stay with us. We're talking about Taz. Please, stay with us.
Yeah, love me.
Give us attention.
I need it.
Our next three-parter is going to be on CM Punk, which Javier wants on the record, as this was an idea he had many moons ago before many he redebuted.
This shit has been planned. These three-parters have been planned out for the better part of a year at this point.
That's true. I will say I don't think we have our next one planned.
Oh, no, I do.
Oh, shit.
Believe me, I've got this shit planned out for like 10 more.
Okay.
We're good for
like a year and a half then.
I've been given complete creative control over this, and I am very proud of it.
Yeah, you get like the main events because you're booking the three-parters. I get the undercard, and that's why we get Midian.
Wasn't Midian my idea?
Hold on. I approved it. I was like, yeah, Midian.
I demanded naked Midian, and you gave it to me.
I do what the people want, you know? So, yes, CM Punk returned. Javier, your thoughts on CM Punk's return?
I'm not even going to lie to you. Like, it legitimately is one of the three best moments, or just best things I've ever experienced as a wrestling fan. Number one will always be Eddie Guerrero winning his title off of Brock. That is never going to get topped. My feelings at that time watching that, him being my favorite guy and everything. It's my first real memory of watching wrestling. So it's just so important to me that it's never going to get topped. Honestly, CM Punk might be number two. That the way I felt when I heard the opening notes of Cult of Personality, I had to turn the volume up because I couldn't hear shit over like the fan that I had going on my AC and the crowd. Like the crowd, by the way, is the reason why this is number two.
Good for Chicago. They absolutely nailed it.
It's the best reaction I've ever seen from a crowd. Like this tops Stone Cold coming back January 4th, 1999 on that episode of Raw where Mankind won the world title when we got the first big Stone Cold pop. It beats Backlash. It beats the announcement pre-Backlash when Linda was like, Stone Cold Steve Austin, and then the crowd popped like crazy. It beats any reaction I've ever heard in wrestling because it was so sustained. Like for the entire 20, 25 minutes, whatever the hell long he was out there for, it was a constant.
It was a roar. Like roar. It literally was the like, whole way through.
It was so like he got emotional. Fucking I got emotional. I don't cry. I don't ever cry. I didn't cry. I didn't even tear up, honestly. But just like, you know, that feeling that you get internally, you're a human. You know all about this. I'm not. So as you can tell, I have to describe it. That feeling you get in like inside of you where you're just like, shit, like you're just moved emotionally by something.
I see you being one of those like those dads who like is clearly involved in all of his kids' sports. And when the kid finally wins the championship, you just give him like a firm handshake and a good job, son.
No, if my kid does any fucking thing good, like my kids, if they're in like 5-year-old soccer league and they score one goal, even though they finish with 10, that first goal, bawling my eyes out. Don't even give a fuck. That's the most important moment of my life.
That's it. That's the win.
I'm going to be so extra as a sports parent. It's not even funny.
The CM Punk return was so well executed. We all knew he was coming back. It was the worst kept secret in all of wrestling. There were two other returns that were better kept secrets that also happened that weekend. We should talk about those as well. I think I predicted a return was coming. I didn't think we were going to get two in the same night.
I didn't think the second one was going to happen.
Yeah. So the first one, Becky Lynch returned. And it was one of the worst booked returns I could have imagined.
Yeah, it was awesome at the beginning.
Oh my God, the beginning. So Sasha Banks, who had been promoted as being in this match with Bianca Belair, who we learned has been ruled out for 8 days prior to SummerSlam.
Mind you, we learned this after Bianca Belair came out already.
Came out, yeah. So instead she's going to be replaced with Carmella, which honestly, fine. Carmella's a good hand. That's a fine match.
They'd wrestled about 80 different times prior to this.
They had. But I would have preferred Toni Storm. That would have been cool.
I would have preferred Liv Morgan. I would have preferred Shayna Baszler. Yeah. I would have preferred literally fucking
honestly,
anyone else.
Carmella would have been fine. Except, again, WWE with their shady tactics promoting the Sasha Banks match. Anyways, out comes Becky Lynch, who tosses out Carmella. I guess that just negates a whole match because she decided
she
wants
her out, and then she threw her into the steps.
Yeah, well, still, like
she beat her ass up. Fuck.
And then the man return, huge pop again, massive pop for Becky Lynch's return. She's super over.
By the way, didn't they ring the bell already prior to Becky coming out? I swear they rung the bell. So wouldn't that have been a DQ?
I don't remember.
Didn't Carmella technically just win on a DQ?
We're gonna say that. Yeah.
Play the tape. Run the tape.
Run the tape back. Go to Peacock. And we have the match, and it's Becky versus Bianca. And Becky extends her hand, cheap shots Bianca, hits one manhandle slam, and wins. And Bianca looks like an absolute fucking chump. I do not care when people are saying, oh, well, she was prepared for Sasha. I don't give a shit, okay?
Prepared for the fucking awesome Kong.
If you are the champ, the fucking leader of the division, you were ready for anybody. You cannot sit there with a straight face and say, Bianca wasn't prepared for Becky Lynch. Bianca Belair is the champ. She has been a good champion. She has had fantastic matches. You're going to job her out to Becky Lynch to turn Becky Lynch heel? Are you out of your fucking minds?
Yeah, and as a wrestler, has been booked pretty strong.
Yeah.
Her booking has been shit. Like the way her feuds, everything has been awful. But as a wrestler, like, performance-wise, she's been booked strong. She's beaten everyone. She hasn't lost, hasn't eaten anything. She's been booked pretty well on that end. For this to be the way, for this to be the way that she loses that title belt is fucking insane.
It doesn't it's make madness. Any sense.
And, like, are we supposed to believe that Becky's still a babyface after this?
Cause no, apparently Becky wants to be a heel.
If that's the plan, good fucking luck with that. Genuinely, good luck with that. Because you're not going to get heel reactions for Becky Lynch after this.
Also returning on SummerSlam, Brock Lesnar, full bearded and ponytailed, fresh off the farm in Saskatchewan.
I'm going to tell you right now, this completely shocked me. When I heard Brock's music, I fucking popped. I was like, oh my God, my brother was laying down next to me. And I was just like, holy fucking shit, Frankie, it's fucking Brock Lesnar. And he was like, wasn't he just there? Like, isn't he like with the company? And I was like, no, he hasn't been seen in like a year and a half. I'm shocked he's here. Because like, you think if he wasn't there for WrestleMania, when there were many opportunities to have him there at WrestleMania, it's not going to happen. He's not booked for SummerSlam. They could easily have told that story. Obviously, John Cena came back, but still, like, you would think Brock would have been a much better fit for Bobby Lashley than Goldberg.
Bill Goldberg, yeah.
Which, we'll get to that in a little bit.
It's going to continue. Isn't that fun?
We'll get to that in a little bit. To see Brock come back was fucking incredible. But the best part about it all was after the cameras went off, when he just laid the smack down on John Cena.
I love the fact that he came out to confront Paul Heyman. It's like seeing your ex out in public. Because, like, Heyman's got his new boo and Roman Reigns. Look at him with the hair and the muscles.
With the golden glove, the little jewels.
And then it's like, oh shit, there's my ex, and he looks mad.
I like how Roman was just like, yeah, I can't handle this one.
Give me Paul Heyman in a shark cage above the ring. That's the gimmick we want, right?
Please do give me that, but don't give me that at the same
SmackDown
time.
SmackDown is stacked because both Becky Lynch and Brock Lesnar are on SmackDown. If I am USA, I'm punching the air right now. Because
NXT's
furious.
In the bin.
Yeah.
Fuck it. SmackDown is
and
looking
Raw
great.
Is being led by Bobby Lashley versus Goldberg because it's going to keep going.
Although there was hope. Damian Priest was being positioned in the spot.
And they're going
makes
back
no
to Saudi Arabia. And it's just...
I don't know why Damian Priest is now fighting the big guy when he's just won his belt.
There's nobody else. Who are you putting in that role that isn't named
fucking
Drew McIntyre?
Xavier Woods.
Yeah. Or if I'm booking this, yes, 100%. If I'm booking this, Woods has the title tomorrow.
Can we just let Big E cash in on the man already?
I would fucking love it. Anywho, we should talk about Taz.
Also, Goldberg sucks.
Yeah, that's a good place to end it. We should talk about Taz because this is his episode.
Wasn't Taz on commentary for AEW Rampage when CM Punk came back?
Yes.
Yeah, he was on commentary.
Yeah, hey.
This is our connection back to Taz.
Tangentially related. So, Taz, what do you know about Taz? What's your thoughts on Taz? What do you know about the man?
This is definitely going to be an area of expertise for you rather than me because I don't know jack shit about Taz as a wrestler. I know two things about Taz, and it's two of the matches that we covered in this podcast. It's the last two matches that we covered in this podcast. Aside from that, my knowledge of Taz is strictly commentary. He's a part of my favorite commentary duo of all time, him and Michael Cole back in the SmackDown days. His run in AEW has been pretty cool. I mean, he's not that great in commentary, but like,
I mean, he's been on commentary in our world now for longer than he's been a wrestler.
Yeah,
like, because he rose to prominence with ECW, debuted in ECW in 1993 and really stopped wrestling in 2001, and then he's been a commentator ever since. Like, that's almost 20 years of commentary for him.
Yeah, I mean, we know him nowadays as the commentator slash
Hook's dad,
you know, Hook, the most dangerous man in AEW.
Is his name actually Hook?
Probably, let's be honest.
I mean, yeah, he's from the Red Hook area of Brooklyn. If there's a guy who's going to be named Hook, it's going to be Taz's son.
Yeah, I don't know.
That tracks.
How old is Hook, by the way?
That is a great question.
Hook looks like he's 5 years old. Like,
oh no, his name is Tyler, and he is, do the math quickly, 22.
Hook is that is the youngest 22-year-old I have ever seen in my life.
Yeah, as somebody who works with university students, they consistently look younger and younger. It's weird.
But yet somehow older.
So Taz, as we know, more of a commentary guy, but he debuted, like I said, with ECW in 1983 after doing the indies. He started in 1987. He had a few one-off matches in WWF. He had one one-off match in WCW before finding a home in ECW. Our first match is him teaming with a longtime ally and also rival, Sabu, against Dipshit, a.k.a. Chris Benoit, and the Shooter, Dean Malenko. We love the Shooter.
Fucking the Shooter. I hate how Styles just referred to them as the Crippler and the Shooter the entire match.
He never used their names. He couldn't
literally not even once. It was just Crippler and
Crippler
Shooter.
And Shooter. It's like Dasher and Dancer and Prancer and Vixen, except it was an asshole and Dean Malenko.
So the same thing.
Which of the reindeer is an asshole?
Prancer.
That tracks. That's actually who I was thinking of too. But Prancer's a prick.
Prancer's a piece of shit.
We are at ECW Return of the Funker in 1995. This is some grainy ass, old school, no production value ECW. Javier, what did you think of the match?
I love the vibes.
The vibes are immaculate.
The song was so 90s, it hurt my soul. I legitimately cannot explain it unless you just watch it. That is the only way I could possibly describe how 90s everything about this scene.
It's very 90s. I mean, it starts with Rocco Rock being wheeled out by Johnny Grunge.
Yeah, I didn't know who any of those people were, so I just skipped through it.
So it was Public Enemy, and Rocco Rock was being wheeled out by Johnny Grunge, and then they get their ass kicked by Benoit Malenko, and they beat up Rocco Rock, who's in a wheelchair. Sabu and Taz make the save and are the tag champs, and that's how the match starts. It just starts with a brawl.
Yeah, which was cool. I enjoyed that. I like ECW because they just don't do anything normally.
That would be boring.
Yeah, what's the fun?
Or it would make Paul Heyman money. He's allergic to that.
What's who wants to have like the normal stuff?
What do you mean a collar and a tie up when we could just this?
We could have three-way matches that end not with a pinfall, but you have to eliminate each other, and then we get to it. You have matches that, like, every match is like no DQ.
Yeah, it's great. It's like when you go to somebody else's house in college and they play beer pong by different rules than you, and you got to learn their rules, and you're like, I don't quite understand, but the essence is the same.
This literally did not land with me in any way, shape, or form.
That's because you don't party. It's because you're cool, and you study, and you're smart.
Dude, fuck says I study. I don't study anything. My college existence consisted of watching sports and playing video games.
I mean, same, but I did some of that drunk. Benoit Malenko starting control. I really like Malenko with a rising DDT on Sabu for a two. We get an early doomsday device from Malenko and Dipshit. And then Taz just goes, suplexes. This was also the appeal of
that.
Taz to me. It's just, he's just like, I know 1,000 different ways to suplex people.
Yeah,
it's a good bit.
Cool. Yeah, Taz hits a belly to belly on Dickhead. Malenko though comes back and hits back to back vertical brain busters that looked
so
fucking
sick.
Vicious.
So sick.
So fucking vicious.
What are your thoughts on the OG Tasmaniac gear?
I didn't like Taz with like hair that wasn't like basically
the mohawk.
Buzz.
Yeah, the buzz mohawk is the only option.
It didn't work for me. None of that worked. None of how Taz looked here worked for me.
But you can understand, like, the Tasmaniac coming from the early, mid-90s as a gimmick. Because, like, yeah, that's when people, like, were kind of weird characters. Like, WWF was going through their weird phase, right? Where everyone had a fucking side job. So the Tasmaniac doesn't seem too out of place. But I think dialing it back and making Taz just, like, a badass brawler was the right decision. Also, shaving his head was the right decision.
Yeah, everything about changing Taz was the correct decision.
Also out there, Paul Heyman and 911, who were out there supporting Taz and Sabu.
which is weird.
It's very weird.
We'll get to that. So there's like a reverse bulldog power bomb combo, but Malenko and Dickhead.
Yeah, it's like the kind of doomsday device, but not really. Yeah.
Yeah. Taz follows it up with a exploder suplex. Taz hits a reverse suplex on Malenko and then a fucking vicious German suplex on Dickhead.
Yep.
Spiked him right on his fucking
neck. His noggin.
Which, cringe.
Yeah.
Taz gets chop blocked by Malenko, and then they start working the knee a little bit. Eventually, Taz has to get dragged out by 911.
Which, he didn't look that hurt.
Yeah, it was kind of fine.
So now one's just like, you got to get out of here for your own
good.
Is the
fix in?
It sure looked that way. Sabu's got some momentum. We get the somersault planche onto Malenko. We get a regular planche onto Benoit. We get a moonsault onto Benoit.
Everything about that looks so scary.
There is no bigger fear I have than seeing Sabu on the top rope. Because I never know which way in direction he's going to go.
Or running somewhere.
Running in the direction of a rope is horrifying.
Sabu dives onto both men. Then he grabs a chair. He hit the most bootleg version of his little chair dive because he almost fucked it up.
Yeah.
Eventually, their heels get control again. Dickhead power bombs. So Sabu set the table up. He opened the table, but he set it up in the corner, on top of the top row.
It was like a little platform.
Yeah. So, Dickhead power bombs Sabu off of that. 1, 2, 3. Dickhead and just Malenko wins.
And I wrote, because this is one of the better rated like early Taz matches, and I wrote, wow, there's no Taz in this match. You live and you learn. Because, you know, I don't watch the matches before we pick them for the podcast, so you live and you learn. Am I going to make this mistake?
How shit were these matches that he had? Because, my God.
Yeah. Am I going to make this mistake with other matches this episode? Yes. So stay tuned.
At least the other one justifies it because it's good. Yeah.
Let's move on to match number two, and it's versus Sabu at Barely Legal 1997, which, fun fact, is the first ever ECW pay-per-view.
Oh!
Yeah, there you go. We learned something.
Well, it was Return of the Funker.
Just a special show, I guess. Just a little special, something special.
Just, it's ECW, but with glitter.
But with Terry Funk. Early in 1997, Sabu and Taz started kind of getting each other's nerves. Taz attacks Sabu's partner, RVD, costing them matches against the Eliminators. In the months leading to ECW's first pay-per-view, Taz would choke out low-level wrestlers with the Taz Mission, the Kata Majime, which sounds like some Doctor Strange shit if I've ever heard some.
Kalima!
He would do that because he viewed his matches with as secondary to his rivalry with Sabu. He then dominated a series of matches against RVD before finally getting Sabu at Barely Legal. Taz is out here and he's being managed by Bill Alfonso, the most annoying man in wrestling, not named Jimothy Cornette.
No, he's probably the most annoying person in wrestling because Jim Cornette is annoying.
He's just but shit.
He's annoying out away from the ring. Like, you don't really hear Jim Cornette as much.
That's true. But Bill Alfonso and his fucking whistle.
Bill Alfonso, you hear more than fucking the crowd, which is That's so true. Annoying.
He could have drowned out the CM Punk pop with his whistle.
Thank God he was there.
Yeah.
At one point, these two, before the match starts, these two guys like get in each other's grill face to face, and Chaz is just the shortest 5'10" individual of all time.
Also, Sabu doesn't even do a ring entrance. He just appears like Batman. He just is in the ring.
I'm Batman.
I'm Sabu. He just shows up.
I'm the homicidal, genocidal,
suicidal.
He's mostly just suicidal. I don't know where the other two came from.
Yeah, I don't think Sabu is committing genocide. I sure hope not. You shouldn't hire him then.
He's not doing homicide either, because, again, he'd be in prison.
I was distracted. Before we talk about the match, because obviously I got distracted by things in the crowd, the assortment of football jerseys, I don't know why everyone thinks, hey, I'm going to a wrestling show, better throw on my best NFL jersey. There's a fuckload of them in this match in particular.
I have one football jersey, and it's a fake one that I got from this Chinese website that I use called DHGate, which I use to get soccer jerseys. I just decided, hey, I'm going to get a Luka Doncic basketball jersey, which I have, which I enjoy. It's right over there somewhere. And I'm going to get my favorite Minnesota Vikings player at the time, Stephon Diggs.
Oh.
Guess how many games Stephon Diggs played for the Vikings after I got that jersey?
I'm going to say zero.
Zero. He was traded 2 weeks later.
Oh, no.
If I'd known that, I would have gotten a fucking Justin Jefferson jersey.
I think of football jerseys I have. I have an Amon Green jersey from the Packers. I know. It became my football practice jersey. And I have a Barry Sanders jersey because Barry Sanders is the truth. I love that man.
Yeah, fuck the Packers.
Anyways, the actual jerseys I want to talk about here. There's either a Gary Anderson or a Warren Moon Vikings jersey. What the fuck?
Why the fuck would you think it's Gary Anderson?
Because he wore number one. I looked up who wore number one for the Vikings. I did
research.
It's
probably Warren Moon.
I hope it's Gary Anderson. I hope it's a kicker.
Is it not Randall Cunningham?
He did not wear number one, according to this site, which is a Vikings site. There's also a Brett Favre jersey, understandable. There's a Kerry Collins jersey, and I just like wrote, sir, are you okay?
Kerry Collins was a top draft choice.
I don't care. So was Jamarcus Russell, all right? Nobody wears these.
Assuming people in Oakland wore a Jamarcus Russell jersey his rookie year.
Yeah, they probably did. And then they probably used it as toilet paper later, as it should be.
Or they threw it away, used it as a fucking trash bag.
The match starts with slaps. Taz goes for an early Taz mission, can't lock it in.
Oh, so Sabu is apparently the first person to ever block the Taz mission.
Yeah.
That felt like that should have been a bigger deal than it was.
It was not. Styles was like, oh, that's never happened before.
Just an offhanded comment that Joey Styles threw out there.
Moving right along.
Taz drops into an ankle lock with a grapevine afterwards, which looks more devastating than literally any ankle lock that Kurt Angle has ever put on.
Kurt just kind of holds your foot.
Taz was like wrenching that motherfucker.
Yeah, Kurt's just got like a foot thing.
He was doing the ankle twist, but he was also like wrenching the knee a little bit.
Kurt Angle is the Quentin Tarantino of wrestling. He's just got a foot thing.
Moving on. Taz busts up. At one point here, he's kind of in like, he's got Sabu's back. Like kind of in like a MMA position. He's got the back.
Yeah.
And he's mounted on the back. He's doing some cross shots with the forearm across the face. And eventually busts up Sabu's nose. So Sabu is now bleeding from the nose in a pretty gnarly way.
Yep.
Sabu gets, I keep wanting to say taboo. It's annoying.
Taboo.
Sabu dives into the crowd onto Taz because that's his offense. It's just doing shit.
You know the taboo from the Black Eyed Peas?
That's a person?
Yeah, it's the one guy from the Black Eyed Peas that you don't know.
I know Will I Am, Apple yeah. D App, and Fergie.
And then the other guy is Taboo.
Oh, good for him.
Taboo kind of looks like a mix of Taz and Sabu. We're doing great today. Like you said, Sabu's offense is just launching himself off of the ropes and into the crowd. And that's exactly what he does here. Does his classic dive off the chair to the outside when Taz is in the ring. Back in the ring, drop toe hold, and Taz with more ground game. Taz with a lot of ground submission and groundwork this match.
Yeah, he puts Sabu into like a half bow and arrow type of submission that looked pretty cool. Eventually, Sabu gets up, hits an enziguri and a somersault leg drop. I don't know how to call that. It's kind of just, he just does a front flip into a leg drop.
That's accurate.
Sabu botches his chair spot.
Yep.
He does that all the time.
Put it on the board. Botch camera.
Tried to hit a tornado DDT on a table that was set up outside between the ring and the guardrail. Taz just kind of throws him, and Sabu goes through the table.
Taz just fucking tosses him through it.
A little further down, Sabu hits a top rope hurricanrana for a near fall. Follows it up with a very far, very high top rope leg drop that looked really fucking cool.
I also want to point out Joey Styles' call of hurricanrana, which led to me thinking that there was like a difference growing up between a hurricanrana and a hurricanrana, because he would say huda a lot. I was like, I don't know what this means.
So now you're confused. It's like how you don't know the difference between a Frankenstein or a hurricanrana.
I have
fucking
heard,
animal.
I have heard your bit enough. I know the difference now.
You better. Anyways. A little further down, Taz hits a Tazplex right on fucking Sabu's fucking top of his fucking head.
Yeah.
That is how, as Joey Styles put it best, that is how you go from five vertical or cervical vertebrae to three vertical cervical vertebrae. That's a lot of words that I do not know how to properly pronounce because English is my second language. So fuck all of you.
Oh, man. Oh, that's
good. I've been speaking English since I was 5, but still.
Hey, I was going to say, so recently the Full Press Wrestling, everyone go check out Full Press Wrestling at fullpresswrestling.com and FPC_wrestling on Twitter, has become very popular in Mexico based on our you know, data that we're getting. So we might have to start doing some of these episodes in Spanish, which will just be you saying things, me hastily typing them into Google Translate, and me going, sí.
Ok, pues, después de todo eso que pasó, Taz cogió a Sabu y le dio con un butterfly suplex.
Hey, I know one of them has a butterfly suplex. Yeah, sí, all right.
Sí, y después de eso, Sabu vino y dio a Taz con un T-bone suplex.
See, you're either talking about steak or the suplex he did. Yeah, I know this. This is good.
Wait, what type of steak is called T-bone suplex?
T-bone steaks.
Anyways, we're just going to keep it moving back in English. Sabu puts on the Taz mission, which I thought was pretty fucking dope. But then even doper than that was when Taz broke it up with a fucking Saito suplex,
yep.
Where once again, Sabu is vertical, but his feet are up.
It's very strange. I liked it.
I love a Saito suplex. It's so great.
Is this when he does Taz's pose, but Taz pops up behind him and does the pose too?
Yes. Yes, it is.
I love Sabu mocking people is hilarious because I feel like I've never heard Sabu talk for more than like two sentences at a time. So I'm just picturing this just quiet kid just like mocking the popular kids. Like, yeah, look, I can do this cool guy pose too.
And I've heard his shoot interviews.
That's true. I have heard his shoot interviews. That was
not
yeah.
great. Anyways, T-bone suplex by Taz onto Sabu's fucking neck.
Yep.
Taz mission. It's over.
Did you watch the aftermatch shenanigans?
Of course I didn't watch the aftermatch shenanigans.
After the match, they got some mutual respect. They're shaking hands. But out comes RVD, and he hits Taz from behind. Sabu and RVD beat up Taz. And then Bill Alfonso takes off all his Team Taz gear and is with Sabu and RVD.
Motherfucker!
That's right. Bill Alfonso is a weasel.
So is RVD a heel?
Yes.
Is that how that worked? Are they yeah. heels? Okay. Because I thought Taz was a heel.
RVD, the most chill man in all of sports entertainment, has been a heel for the beginning of his ECW run. Like, he was a heel for like 3-ish years.
Wait, was Taz a babyface?
Yes.
In this match?
Yes.
Let's go to break.
Let's go to break. When we get back, we're looking at Taz challenging for the ECW championship. Back from the break. Guilty as charged 1999. Up to this point, Taz had held the FTW championship, a title that he still kind of has because it's with Team Taz. Held by Ricky Starks? Is that who has it?
Yes.
Huh. Well, good for Ricky. He's held the TV title. He has held the tag titles, but he hasn't held the ECW championship. In fact, this is his first ever world title shot against Shane Douglas. Guilty as charged 99. This is probably the best match of the bunch.
No, this is not my... No.
No? Which one is your favorite?
So we'll get to it.
Oh, okay, yep. That's fair. I meant for Taz. This is the best Taz match of the bunch. And you're like, Evan, what does that mean? We'll get to it. What did you think of this one?
I like this match. You know, I'm not that big a fan of Shane Douglas, if I'm being honest.
Me neither.
I don't find his matches entertaining. I think he's fine. Don't get me wrong. I think Shane Douglas is fine. I think for his role that he played in ECW, he was the perfect guy to put into that spot. I don't think that many guys could have succeeded in that role the way that he did. I thought he was a really good contrast to everyone else in ECW. He brought a different flavor to it. But after a certain point, it kind of gets... Like, why is this guy still the top guy?
Yeah, I get that.
He's just not as good as everyone else.
This doesn't sound strange. I feel like he needed to be born like 10 years earlier. Like, if his shtick that he did in ECW in terms of like just the kind of the style he has was like when he was in his prime in the 80s, I feel like he would have done really well. But he did it in the 90s, and like there were just guys who were better at that shtick than he was.
I don't know. My thing is just like, it worked at the beginning. It really did for the better part of his run. But like, especially by 99, like there's just so many people who I felt like should have been top guys more than him. Like Taz, like RVD, you know, like all these other guys who were just better, who could have played that role better. Yeah. But instead I have Shane Douglas.
And this is Shane Douglas on his way out of the company. But we'll talk
about that. We'll talk about that in a second. Pretty technical start to the beginning of the match here because, well, I mean, it's Shane Douglas.
Yeah.
It's not exactly. He also has a cast. I don't know what he has a cast from, but he's got one.
He sure does.
I don't, why does he have a cast?
I don't know.
Evan, this is the stuff that you do. You tell me why people do things.
I don't
Anyways, Taz catches Douglas pretty early on here in the corner, hits an Alabama slam. Douglas does a dive onto Taz here from the guardrail. It's not that far, people. He dove about 2 feet. He got on top of the guardrail. Taz was on the other side of it in the crowd, dove onto it. They fought in the crowd for about 85 years. I know you have notes on this. Do you have
They just go all over the fucking crowd. Like, it wouldn't be an ECW main event without a ton of random crowd work. It's like a bad comedy show. And like, they get into the second deck. They brawl all the way to the top of the arena. They're just kind of hitting each other. They both come out bloody. I'm not sure exactly how Douglas got bloody. Cause like,
I know how Taz got bloody. Yeah. It's when fucking Douglas grabbed the chair and whacked him with it and then sat down right next to him and just threw a punch when he was coming to.
But I just have no idea how Douglas got bloody too. But it's fine. Taz suplexes Douglas over a railing onto a platform. That was kind of cool.
Yeah, and then the platform like kind of dented in the front. Like it was like now tilted.
Slid down it.
It was like a 90-degree or 45-degree angle down. Yeah. So they slid down. Yeah. So first off, Douglas, like, they didn't slide down. Douglas like pushed Taz off of it. Like fucking Mufasa and Scar. He just like
long live the king.
And then he just like slid down and jumped off.
Finally back to the ring. Douglas has a table. Taz is in the ring, and once Shane Douglas is punching him, you just hear Taz asking to hit him harder. It reminded me of Samuel L. Jackson in the cult classic Team America World Police. Stop trying to hit me and hit me.
Speaking of fucking classics, I'm plugging your podcast.
Okay.
Bob Gatzel Podcast. Great show. Listen to it. Download it. Give them love. Love the work that you and Mallory do on that. You talked about Bubble Boy this week.
Yes, we did.
One of my legitimate all-time favorite movies. I'm not even trolling. It is legitimately in my top 10 favorite movies of all time. And the disrespect.
Oh, man.
On one of a cinema masterpiece.
I love this.
$5.99!
The differences between my two podcast co-hosts. On our episode this week, Mallory watched Bubble Boy and described it to me, and it was a journey. I feel like I need to watch it for myself.
You haven't watched it?
No, I didn't watch it. We usually split the movies, and somebody will watch it, and the other person will get recapped.
When I tell you that you need to watch this because it is important for your health, it is one of the most entertaining pieces of cinema ever created.
Oh,
I cannot
God.
Believe this. This is a disgrace. The disrespect, the slander on an all-time great Jake Gyllenhaal performance.
Would you rank it above his other 2001 film, Donnie Darko?
Yes. I rank it above every movie he's ever made in his life.
Wow. Anywho, Pop Capsule Podcast, find it on Spotify, Apple, and Libsyn. There you go. We're in the ring, and... they trade shots in the ring. Taz gets tossed headfirst into a table in the corner. There's a second table. It says ECW on the bottom, which I found like weirdly hilarious. They're like, look, branding. It's like, no, probably because somebody else was going to steal their tables if they didn't spray paint them.
Property of ECW.
Yeah, these are our tables. Fuck off.
What happened here? Where am I?
Tables. We're at the tables.
Yeah. Oh, Sabu comes out.
Yeah, which is crazy. The lights go out and fireworks go off, which is insane. And someone's at the ramp and it's Sabu with the Gilbert sparklers. He's ready to party. He takes out both guys.
With the Gilberts.
I love somebody who's you know, return / re-debut is just beating up everybody in the ring.
Oh,
he's
so
like, I don't care.
Can we talk about the fact that Sabu's music plays the entire time that he is out and he is out for a solid like 3.5 minutes.
I love that. Like, have a theme song while I kick ass.
Like, what the fuck is this? Kick ass? Is it? Are we? Am I watching Kick Ass? Am I watching? What is it? What the fuck is the guy's name? Anthony Taylor Joy Johnson? Whatever the fuck his
Aaron
name
Taylor
is.
Johnson.
Aaron Taylor Johnson. Am I watching Aaron Taylor Johnson beat people up when he doesn't know how to do it?
Yeah. The weird thing about that movie is that it has both Quicksilvers in it, because his best friend is played by Evan Peters. And then they would go on to be the two Quicksilvers in the X-Men franchise and Marvel.
Oh my God.
That's right. It's all connected. The multiverse is real. Sabu's here. He takes out both men. Like I said, chair shots to Taz's head. Fully unprotected, you know. LOL 90s.
Just a chair, Taz. That was my
hilariously delayed springboard moonsault. Sabu goes on the chair, up onto the rope, and takes a good 20 seconds to ready himself through the moonsault. And Taz and Shane Douglas are kind of out there on the ringside like, oh, I wonder what he's doing.
Fuck is this guy doing?
And Sabu lands on them. This is what I mean by how terrifying it is when Sabu gets on the ropes.
But like, oddly, I loved it. I loved every second of this come out, because it made no sense. I was genuinely shocked. I didn't know any. Obviously, I don't know anything about this.
Yeah, me neither. I didn't know what was going on.
This is not the part of ECW. I really did not watch much of that. Up until like 2000, I think everything I've seen from ECW is like late 99, 2000 to close.
Yeah. Sabu puts Taz through a table and then just goes to the back. Shane Douglas covers Taz, but he gets the shoulder up. Then Sunny appears. Tammy Lynn Sitch is here.
Tammy Lynn Sitch.
She's going to brawl with Francine, who obviously had accompanied
Tommy Dreamer's wife?
No, that was Beulah. No. Sunny was with Chris Candido, who also was out here.
No, not Sonny. I'm talking about Francine.
Oh, Francine was with Shane Douglas.
Yeah.
Yeah. Candina's here to break it up. I just wrote, what the fuck is going on? Like, I don't know enough about the storylines to know what is happening.
I didn't know Chris Candido was in ECW. Also, when did Sonny leave WWE?
Candido had been in Triple Threat with Shane Douglas and Bam Bam Bigelow, which broke up during this year.
Oh.
Yeah. So Candido turns on Douglas here, breaks up the Triple Threat. Taz gets in a T-bone Tazplex. Taz mission. He locks in twice because once was broken up. Douglas is out cold. Taz wins the ECW championship after a ton of shenanigans.
The most shenanigans imaginable.
So much shenanigans. The match itself was actually pretty fun. There was a lot of crowd stuff. I enjoyed this match. But the actual in-ring action was good.
It was a surplus of fuckery.
Yes, a metric fuck ton of fuckery.
The entire match, not even just the ending sequence.
Yeah, so much. Let's talk Taz promo.
Let's talk Taz talk.
That's welcome to Taz talk. Everybody gets their own interview segment now. So Taz talk, that works.
Talking Taz.
Talking Taz with Hook. It's just Hook doing a deep dive of his dad's career.
No. It's Taz. Go. He's a podcast host. Every person that he interviews gets beat down by Hook.
Hook just kicks their ass. So we're actually looking at a Taz promo from right after he won the ECW World Heavyweight Championship. And he's talking about TNN turning extreme with ECW because they had just joined TNN, which would be one of the death blows for the company.
Yeah, I don't know why, but we'll get to that eventually, I guess.
Yeah, maybe we'll do a deep dive into shitty business decisions.
We'll do cross body of work, shitty business decision.
And just be all on Paul Heyman.
And then the Saudi Arabia deals. Yes. He starts describing the wild shit that ECW does, and I was just like, WWE would allow literally none of this.
No. I mean, they would eventually, because they wanted to be cool.
Yeah, weirdos. When everything settles, it's just gonna be him standing there as world heavyweight champion. Then he goes on to say that standing there, he will have the two most dangerous weapons in this business, in this federation, and that's these hands.
I see where Braun got his whole gimmick
from a man that's a whole foot shorter than him.
I didn't do what the tiny guy said. My hands are my weapons. And then he starts calling up guys who are in other companies.
Yeah, he talks about the millennial man.
Yeah. Chris Jericho.
Although he didn't say millennial, he said millennium.
Millennium. And he talks about how he made Chris Jericho tap out. He calls out Bam Bam Bigelow, Too Cold Scorpio, Chris Candido, Shane Douglas, who's now taking WCW to all new heights. Shane Douglas is not taking WCW to new heights.
Did not do anything. Although he did say that his back isn't strong enough to carry that company.
Which is very funny. Talks about how he choked out Lawler.
Called Lawler a night off.
Which is hilarious because then they're both the color commentators for like a large chunk of WWE history.
Yeah.
He also makes a reference to like not going Hollywood or going to the movies. And I'm like, yeah, because they made the Willy Wonka movie a long time ago.
Hey, 2005.
That's true. He could have come back. Can you imagine one of the Oompa Loompas just choking out a child?
Honestly, it wouldn't be the worst thing that happens in that movie.
Yeah, just like Oompa Loompa Doompa Dee Doo, I have got a Taz mission for you.
He says he's the guy your mother told you about. He's not a role model, not going to do acting gigs like you mentioned, or talk to media, or schmooze with celebrities. He says it's kill or be killed. Then he finishes it off with his line. What is it?
Beat me if you can, survive if I let you.
Yeah. Good promo, this.
Yeah. It's a legitimately good promo, especially from the world champion. Like, Taz is not a promo guy. It was just funny because he's a decent commentator now.
Yeah. I mean, he's a color guy. He's never going to be a play-by-play guy.
No, and he shouldn't be. But
he was not great with women. But
his line is he's got like a good catchphrase at the end. It works for his gimmick, and the promo itself was good. Had the right energy. He didn't lull, didn't overstay its welcome. It was good.
The vibes were not bad.
Let's hope the vibes continue to not be bad. We're gonna take our last break. When we get back, two more Taz matches. Back from the break, and remember earlier I said, hey, I should probably learn how these matches go for the wrestlers before I add them in. Well, this is the prime fucking example. Anarchy Rules 1999, we have a triple threat ECW World Heavyweight Championship match. Taz versus Masato Tanaka versus Mike Awesome. Taz is in this match for all of 5 minutes.
Okay, so here's how it went down. I knew this match already. I'd seen this match multiple times, if I'm being honest. It's one of my favorites from the ECW era. I really like this match. It's my favorite of the bunch.
I saw Masato Tanaka and Mike Awesome. The two of whom had matches that I remember watching growing up and thinking, this is the most violent thing I've ever seen.
I watched their matches from FMW.
Oh, shit.
Which are more violent than anything ever. If the people listening to this, if none of you have seen an FMW match before, go. Right now. Pause this podcast. Boot up, I'm not even going to give you a suggestion. Just type in FMW match, whatever the first or second or whatever option you want to click on it. That shit is fucking insane. Anyways, welcome back to the podcast.
I hope you enjoyed your FMW match.
Yeah, I hope you're not too traumatized, and I apologize if you are. The second I saw Tanaka, I knew the shit was going to be violent. The second I saw Mike Awesome, I knew the shit was going to be violent. And Taz is also here. So there's a shit ton of streamers to start off at the beginning because Tanaka is the most popular man in the universe. Tanaka is insanely over with this crowd. Taz is insanely over with this crowd, but in a negative way. Yeah. He gets booed out of the fucking building.
He's getting used sold out chance because at this point he has already been signed to WWE. People knew he was leaving.
Yes, as Styles, I believe, said. I don't know if it was Styles or... Virus, I forget the
phone. Cyrus the Virus, aka Don Callis.
Yeah, Don Callis, that's his name. I don't remember which one of those who said it, but one of them said, yeah, the internet wrestling crowd is normal.
Wow, shitting on the internet wrestling crowd? That's not something that's still relevant today.
That's not something you should be doing when your whole fan base is an internet wrestling crowd.
It's true.
And then at the beginning, I have to obviously, I'm selling it here when I say, where is Awesome? I know exactly where he is. Yeah. Awesome is ringside because Taz grabs a mic, calls on Mike Awesome, who's in the crowd, tells Paul Heyman, hey, get that motherfucker in here. I want him a part of the three-way. He starts berating Paul Heyman too, who is fed up with Taz at that point and is just like, you know what, Awesome, get the fuck in the match.
Yeah, Awesome, who happens to be in his ring gear.
Admittedly, the man looks like he's always in his ring gear.
The man lives in his ring gear. So it's now a triple threat match. Awesome gets over the barricade. The second he gets over the barricade, Tanaka, who doesn't forget, motherfucker, jumps over the ropes and lands on him. I'm like,
by the way, for those who do not know, Tanaka and Mike Awesome had like a legendary feud with each other.
It is one of the three best feuds in ECW history, bar none.
And it's one of the greatest feuds in FMW history, too.
Yeah. At the beginning of the match, Tanaka and Awesome just are beating the shit out of each other because that's what they're used to doing. And Taz just sits in the corner and just applauds, just watches.
Yeah, he is literally resting in the corner, in the opposite corner.
Then both Tanaka and Awesome realize, oh, fuck, we should probably get that guy.
Yeah, they rush over. Taz hits a Tazplex on Tanaka, a bridging German suplex to Awesome. Eventually, the numbers advantage plays against them. They gang up on him in the corner. Taz hits a stiff lariat to Awesome, an overhead belly to belly to Tanaka at one point here.
Yeah.
But eventually it doesn't matter anymore. Everything goes back to normal. Awesome hits a power bomb on, I want to say it's a power bomb. He realistically just does the power bomb, like rotation up. He's got the man up. And then he just fucking launches
just
him across the fucking
ring. Just tosses his ass, yeah.
Like he's a fucking child.
don't throw children.
Top rope Tazplex on Awesome, which looked fucking brutal. Because for those who don't know, Mike Awesome is like 6'5".
Yeah, he's a legitimately big dude. Yeah,
he's like a real wrestler.
Hey, Taz is a real wrestler too. He's got heart. Mike Awesome is listed as 6'6".
Yeah, Mike Awesome is a professional wrestler. Like a legit one that would succeed. Taz, he was in commentary. That's all I got to say about that. Not that I'm a body guy by any means, but still.
Mike Awesome is cousins with Horace Hogan, which means that Mike Awesome is tangentially related to Hulk Hogan.
I don't even know who Horace Hogan is. Anyways, where was I? Oh, we get a roaring elbow on Taz by Tanaka, which is his finisher, and a fucking top ropes frog splash from Awesome. They stack pin Taz, and Taz is eliminated.
That's what I mean by I didn't know how short Taz's run in the match was. This is one of his like two best matches. It's his best rated championship match.
It's an excellent match
between Tanaka and Awesome.
It is an excellent match.
We're going to keep talking about it because it's a really good match. So Taz gets eliminated. His reign is over. He's to send off. The whole company comes out to the stage. And they're all out there to greet him. You know, they're all cheering him on. Like, there's no ill will, clearly, to his departure.
Yeah. I mean, it probably made the most sense for him financially to go to WWE. Yeah. There is a very loud fuck you, Chaz chant from the audience.
Yeah. The ECW faithful don't care about your good moment, all right?
Yeah. Awesome hits a tope on Tanaka, which is fucking nuts to me, considering he's massive.
He is massive.
Awesome with a sit. By the way, for those of you, like, you know, let's say people around my age or something who, like, are gunker, I don't know, you do you, who are listening to this and don't know Mike Awesome, because honestly, I can understand why. Like, I'm not that big of an ECW guy, but, like, I know Mike Awesome because I get curious sometimes and I like looking at new wrestlers, and Mike Awesome is awesome. Probably the best person I could describe Mike Awesome in a modern day comparison, rest in peace, Brody Lee.
Yeah,
I would say Brody Lee's a pretty apt comparison. More fair. For his Luke Harper stuff than his Brody Lee stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, Luke Harper's probably decent.
A good comp. Yeah,
can do shit.
So like you said, huge sit up, awesome bomb. The brawl on the outside, Tanaka gets a chair and runs down the length of the entry ramp. He makes the entire locker room like move out of his way so he can run farther just to hit Tanaka to hit Awesome with the chair. Then does a tornado DDT using the chair as like a little boost. I love Tanaka. I love his moveset. I love his energy.
I love Tanaka.
He's great. We get a diving elbow drop with the chair. Awesome kicks out. Then Awesome hits an awesome bomb. Over the ropes, through the chair to the outside. Just
that man did not give a fuck.
Awesome splash and a two count. Tanaka survives, which is crazy.
I'm sorry, Alabama slam and then the awesome splash for a near fall. Three very stiff, very unprotected chair shots to Tanaka's fucking head.
He doesn't fall down until the third one.
He basically no-sells them.
But he bounces right back up after the third one.
Yeah, Tanaka eventually figures his life out, hits a diamond dust, which is a move I haven't seen in so long.
I popped so hard.
I fucking love the diamond dust. The diamond dust needs to be a move in wrestling.
Described by Styles, for everyone who doesn't know what we're talking about, as a somersault stunner.
Yeah, the diamond dust is basically Ember Moon's
eclipse,
but she does it cooler. So I'm not even going to...
She does. She
does it way cooler than a diamond dust. A diamond dust is literally just a front flip into a stunner. It's so fucking cool. I need more. It sucks, by the way, because it would probably hurt the shit out of your ass muscles, but I don't care.
German suplex, a spear by Awesome, another two count.
What a spear, too, by the way.
Good spear, yeah.
Fucking amazing spear.
We've got a chair shot.
No. This is the reason why. This is one of my favorite fucking matches ever.
All right.
Remember the first episode of this podcast? Not the Eddie Guerrero one. The first episode? Yeah. Where one of the questions you asked me was what my finisher would be. And I told you it was a chair shot off the top rope.
Yep.
It is because of Mike Awesome in this match.
Because he hits a chair shot off the top rope?
My motherfucker in my finisher. I'm a chair shot off the top rope. Oh, I love that move. And then he hits like a weird weak. He sets up a table right in front of the corner. Hits the weakest of weak chair shots just to lay Tanaka down on the table.
He doesn't want to like put him through the table. He just kind of wants to like...
He just kind of nudged him with the chair, basically. Just a little nudge. He basically nudged him back.
A little nudge shot.
Tanaka gets up and he tries to go for a superplex. But Awesome is fucking twice his size. So he is not able to do so. Awesome gets him up, hits the Awesome bomb through the table, stacks him. 1, 2, 3. Mike Awesome is now your ECW World Heavyweight Champion.
Yes. Awesome would also leave ECW not very long after that. And it led to a very strange situation. I guess he left in 2000, and it was a very strange thing where he didn't tell ECW, or I guess he did, but he didn't drop the ECW belt yet. So there was a situation worked out where ECW brought back in Taz, who at this point will leave for WWF, to beat ECW champion Mike Awesome at a show to get the ECW championship back in ECW. Taz would lose it to somebody else. Crazy, weird thing. So a WWE guy beat a WCW guy for the ECW title.
Yeah, and now Mike Awesome is persona non grata with all the ECW people.
Yes, well, yeah, Mike Awesome has also passed away since then, but yeah.
Now he is the Ray Allen to the Celtics big three.
Oh, man. The way that they hate Ray Allen is hilarious.
It's my favorite thing, though.
KG cropped him out of an Instagram photo recently.
It is my favorite thing.
It's so petty. So we talked about how Taz would leave ECW. He was going to the WWF. He left, in his words, because he was at the top of the company and had lost his spark. He wasn't feeling as much drive anymore. Also, I feel like Paulie's inability to pay people might have been a factor, because that seemed to be a factor for a lot of people.
Or like the factor. Yeah. But he didn't want to talk shit because he was faithful.
And because he is one of Paul's boys. He really is. Taz... We're looking at his debut at the Royal Rumble 2000. I feel like we've revisited this pay-per-view like four separate times now, because it's pay-per-view. It's an excellent show.
It's awesome.
He debuted against the then undefeated Kurt Angle. Kurt Angle with hair. You love to see it.
Yes, Kurt Angle with hair in his annoying happy-go-lucky phase where he was so fucking good.
I see Kurt Angle doing his intro and his promo, and I'm just sitting here going, how the fuck do you not make Chad Gable his son? He looks and sounds like Chad Gable does right now.
Chad Gable does sound very similar to Kurt Angle.
They're like, you know what he needs? Jason Jordan.
No. You know what he needs? The black guy who looks nothing like him.
Yeah. Anyways, Taz's theme in WWE is awesome.
Yeah.
Taz's theme song is fucking amazing. You got the heartbeat, you got the flat line, and then you got like all the intense guitar riff. You got all the orange and black around the arena.
But before that, in the promo, we got to talk about the promo.
Okay, talk about Kurt's promo. It's good.
Kurt takes a couple shots at the Knicks, because as this pay-per-view occurred in 2000, January of 2000, And the prior year in 99, the Knicks made it all the way to the NBA Finals.
They did.
Patrick Ewing was not there because injuries.
Yeah.
It's the Ewing theory. Anyways, they stunk up the joint. They lost in the finals to the San Antonio Spurs, mm-hmm. Tim Duncan in the second season, all that jazz, yada, yada. Yeah, he takes a shot in New York. He says he's going to be New York's champion for the night, only for the night, because the man's from Pittsburgh. He also isn't a champion, so I don't know whose champion he's going to be. The crowd is chanting, "We want Taz." They know what the fuck is going on.
Yeah, here. They know what's happening, because the matchup announced for Kurt Angle was going to face an unnamed opponent. They're in New York, where Taz is from. And yeah, of course it's going
to
be
and
Taz.
And I'm sure Davey M knew what was up to.
Big Daddy Dave knew.
Anyways, Kurt finishes up, caps off his promo by saying, "Remember your three eyes. Come on out here and give it your best try." Then we get the Kick-Ass theme song.
So fucking good.
Taz comes out, towel over his head, all that jazz, looking like a million bucks, until he stands in the ring next to Kurt.
And he's small.
And he's a small boy.
Yeah. This is also why we think Taz is so small, because when he was in WWE, he was, in comparison to the Land of Giants.
Like, Kurt isn't exactly the tallest. Kurt Angle's like 6 feet tall.
But like, Billy Gunn is like 6'8", and he wasn't even pushed as a big guy, you know? Crazy.
Which is fucking saying something, because he's in AEW and he's one of the tallest guys on the roster.
Taz jumps Angle right away, tosses him over the top rope. Angle eventually does get control, though. Does an overhead belly to belly. He's looking good. He's relying on that amateur wrestling ability.
Yeah, he does some suplexes. He did a suplex on the ramp too, which is pretty dope.
Yeah.
Taz eventually crotches Angle on the top rope by running into the rope while Angle is on the top. Hits an overhead belly to belly for a near fall because Angle gets foot on the top rope.
Yeah,
on the
bottom
rope.
Belly overhead off the top rope.
Yeah.
Bullshit.
Angle gets his foot on the rope at the last second. Angle puts on a small package for a near fall. Angle hits a bridging German for a near fall. Angle tries to go for the Angle slam. Taz breaks it up, hits an overhead German, hits a Tazplex, hits a T-bone suplex, Taz mission. Jerry the King Lawler is complaining about choking and shit on commentary, but we know it's because his bitch ass got put down by Taz. And he's heated about it.
He is heated. He
doesn't
forget.
Your agenda, King. I know what it is. Taz is out, Angle is out cold. Taz wins.
A hot debut. The fact that he ends Kurt Angle's winning streak. Nothing will really come of it. Taz really didn't capitalize on it in terms of his WWF success, his WWE success. He didn't really do a lot once he got to WWE. He was obviously part of the invasion angle. He worked as kind of the mouthpiece of the alliance. He had a mini feud with Lawler after he had... got an injury. He took the summer off of 2000 because he had an arm injury. He came back as a heel. He feuded with Lawler. The invasion angle happened, and then he would be on commentary by 2002 full-time.
He had to retire because of neck issues and some, right? Neck issues, correct?
Yeah.
And yeah, he became the happy-go-lucky, very inappropriate SmackDown announcer right next to Michael Cole.
Yes. I will say, you have been on record saying how much you love the Cole and Taz team. I fucking hated Cole. I truly
really?
Did. I hated Cole. I from like the jump, I know I was influenced by my older brother who hated him stronger. And then it just rubbed off on me to the point where when I went to a SmackDown taping in 2003, I took a bunch of photos and on the back I wrote like things about like the matches and stuff. And I took a photo of the commentary desk. And on, and I said, "I'm going to replace Michael Cole when I'm older. I hope he's not on commentary anymore." And he is. He's still there.
And now, he's actually pretty good.
He's not bad. But he just, he's, his job is to shill. Like, he is a corporate front, essentially. So it's not his fault. When he gets to just do commentary, he's very good. Everyone he's knows the examples. Front. Yeah. You know, Beast in the East, he's excellent. UK tournament, he was excellent.
Yeah.
When he's not overproduced, he's a really good wrestling commentator. There's a reason they struggle to find somebody to match him in terms of talent, and they keep burning through other play-by-play guys. Remember Adnan Virk? I like Adnan Virk. He used to be on the Score, which is like the Canadian
He was fun on
show.
ESPN.
Yeah, he's a great guy.
Great on podcast. Big movie buff.
just not a good play-by-play guy for wrestling. I still don't know why they released Tom Phillips. Tom Phillips was actually good. I think Tom Phillips is a fine play-by-play
guy.
Who's
the fucking the guy now?
Jimmy Smith.
Jimmy Smith. I didn't like him on SummerSlam. I wasn't a fan.
Yeah, I barely listened to SummerSlam commentary, with the exception of hearing Pat McAfee call the John Cena main event.
Pat McAfee is fucking awesome.
Pat McAfee, get well soon. Test positive.
Wait, whoa, whoa, whoa. What happened?
You got COVID.
Oh, fuck's sake.
Yeah. So Pat McAfee's out for a couple of weeks, but hope he gets better soon.
Shout out to Pat McAfee. Shout out to Taz. He's Shout doing the damn business. He's still going strong. He's with AEW. He's got his whole group with Hook, the most dangerous man in all of
Shout out
wrestling.
To Hook.
This podcast is really just to promote Hook and his career, because Hook is legitimately the most dangerous man in all of professional wrestling. All he does is beat people up.
Dude has 100% success rate.
Literally, think about it. Who is he beating up? Christian Cage? Brian Cage? That man doesn't like cages, by the way.
Nicholas Cage. He's just beating up cages.
He's beating up everybody. He yeah. legitimately is just beating up everyone. He beat up Cody.
Johnny Cage.
Moxley, I'm pretty sure he beat up. I don't know if he debuted by that point.
Hook is unstoppable.
Hook just beats people up. Has he had a match?
Undefeated. Your thoughts on Taz after covering his career?
It was cool. You know, we've seen a couple of Taz matches previous to this episode. Name notably last week, right? Or 2 weeks ago with the Bam Bam episode. Bam Bam. Yeah, I saw that. That was a pretty good match. You know, he has good matches. I love the character, just the badass. I can't get over the fact that he's fucking 2'3", but like, my man is wider than he is.
2'3" and built different.
That is weird for me. But yeah, no, I really enjoy everything that Taz did in this episode. It was cool. I like he's more of a submission based guy. I like it when submission people aren't little. You know, like Zack Sabre Jr. and Daniel Bryan, they're fucking excellent at the technical wrestling. They're great in the submission style offense. But it would just be so much cooler if a guy like, I don't know, fuck it. It's not actually a real comparison, but just, you know, thinking of builds. If a person like fucking Keith Lee were a technical savant guy, because like, how do you deal with that? You know,
it's an unstoppable
combination. It's just cooler when thicker dudes do submission-based things. It just looks funnier.
Javier is calling for thicker, submissive dudes.
that is exactly what I am saying. Hit my DM.
Speaking of that, where can people find you on social media?
I am on Twitter at JMelloSports. You know what to do.
Follow me on Twitter at 7Gomes, ITSEVANGOMES. Follow the podcast on Twitter and Instagram at CrossBodyOfWork. If you have ideas for who we should cover after our next three-parter, crossbodyworkpod@gmail.com, or hit us in the DMs. As we mentioned at the top of the episode, this next coming three-parter is CM Punk. And because the timeline works out, we're going to be able to cover his match with Darby Allin at All Out.
I am excited.
Shit.
I am so excited. You don't want to miss it. Go watch All Out. It's looking like a fucking fantastic show.
It's going to be stacked.
I don't even care about the fucking title matches. I mean, I think by the looks of it, it's probably going to be Lucha Bros versus Young Bucks, which is going to be really
good.
That
would make sense, yeah.
I don't care about the main title match. I really do not care about... it's looking like Kingston versus Miro beat on that, too.
I love that. I love that match.
It'll
That's gonna
be fine.
Good.
I think.
And then Britt Baker versus Chris Statlander.
Whatever. Who cares? But I get CM Punk against Darby Allin. That's a fucking dream matchup for me, because as you know, I love Darby Allin. Mm-hmm. And I get Jon Moxley versus Kojima, which... I get Jon Moxley versus Breadman. Let's fucking go.
Did you book this show?
I booked those two matches. That's it. I just booked those two.
Booked, and he's busy. Like we said, next week, start of the next three-parter at CM Punk. Please hit us up with people you want to see us cover. If you have an idea for who we haven't covered yet, who you want to see, double-check with all of our old episodes, make sure we haven't covered them. I forgot that we've already covered Chavo Guerrero. We did.
Huh. Yeah, we did Kerwin White.
Yeah.
If you want to see us cover Breadman, tell us.
Yeah, but... that's going to wrap up this week's episode covering the career of Taz. It wraps up Haas Month. Until next August, Javier, any final words for the people?
All right. This week on Javier's Life Advice, I don't know. Things are good. You know, I had a job interview earlier today, which is pretty dope. It's with DraftKings. Hope I actually get the chance to do that here in Boston, not the
New
York.
Put good vibes into the universe for me.
Put good vibes into the universe. I do have a backup. I did sign up to start an EMT course that starts up in a couple of weeks for the firefighter route. Not sure if I mentioned that on the podcast. If I haven't, I want to be a firefighter.
He wants to fight fires with his bare hands.
If the DraftKings thing doesn't work, if that works out, then fuck. But yeah, no, Brigham Women's is a hospital here in Boston. I might be able to find some opportunities with that because my dad works for a clinic offshoot there. I can get a lot of recommendations. Pretty much everyone knows me at that clinic. So good words. Things are looking up for me. If they're not looking up for you, fucking reach out. I could send some good vibes. Evan's got good vibes to send too. Evan's living the life over there.
Evan, good vibes.
You're fucking freelancing. Amy's got a real job. You guys are in Ottawa, established. Cooper is fucking vibing.
He's thriving.
Out.
He's thriving with me home all day. He truly is.
How happy is Cooper?
He loves when people are home. We have had this cat only during the pandemic times. So he's not used to not having somebody around all the time. So because we've been doing work from home this whole time. So the adjustment to when both of us are gone, the second we get home, like if we have gone out for the day, the second we get home, he is just all over us because he's like, hey, where the fuck were you? Like he'll be kind of sassy about it for like 5 minutes. And he's like, all right, attention, food. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. But no, like you said, I'm freelancing. If you need any freelance work, freelance writing, I don't just write about sports. I write about other things. I write about pop culture on bingecorner.com. I write about basketball and Belly Up Sports. I write about other shit. I have other interests and other topics. If you need freelance writing, if you need a podcast host, if you need podcast editing, if you need just, somebody to help you out, hit me up. It's Evan Gomes.
The boys are thriving. The boys have vibes.
And we hope you're thriving too.
If you are not thriving, if you do not have good vibes, dude, hit us up.
And speaking of good vibes,
whatever.
Thank you to everybody who listens. Our numbers keep going up and up. Tell your friends about the show. Share it wherever. Follow us on social media. Tweet out our episodes, whatever. But the love has been wonderful. You're giving good vibes to us, so we're giving good vibes back to you.
Yes, we want to thank you again. Doing this podcast, we're at episode 78 already. Fuck me.
Right?
It's been so long.
It's been so long.
It's fun. Me and Evan, we get to interact. We get to do this podcast. I know that every week, if I'm feeling down, if I'm doing whatever, it doesn't matter what my mood is, I know Evan's going to be there to lift me back up again because, God damn it, that man's vibes are immaculate. Because
we get to talk about Hook.
We get to talk about fucking Hook. We get to do this podcast. Podcast is basically just me and Evan fucking around while talking about wrestling.
Yeah, I mean, we talk about matches and you learn things maybe, but like mainly it's stupid shit. And that's like, the beauty of it.
Fucking thousands of people listen to that shit. And that's wild to me. It literally blows my mind. I thought we'd have like 5 people listening by this point.
Yeah, but two of them would be us.
Yeah, and it just keeps, and the other one would be my mom. But it just keeps going up. And I want to thank all of you guys again. The vibes are immaculate around here. We're growing the community a little more. So yeah, I can't thank you guys enough for this. And I really hope that you guys are doing well.
That's a good positive note to end it on. Thank you for joining us for Haas Month. We'll be back next week for the start of CM Punk.